Today is February 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up, France's military strikes rebels in Chad.
It was during a meeting with parliamentarians in the French lower house of parliament on Tuesday. The French foreign minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, said that France had indeed struck rebels in Chad to prevent a coup d'etat.
That was Catherine Field reporting from Paris. Details coming up. Also ahead, U.S. President Donald Trump insists the wall on the border with Mexico will be built even if Congress does not approve the funds. And with Valentine's Day just around the corner, we'll talk about the heart, but with a tech twist. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump insists the wall on the border with Mexico will be built even if Congress does not approve the funds he wants for it. U.S. congressional leaders said Tuesday they have agreed on the foundation for a federal budget deal and are urging the president to sign it. Trump said he's not happy with the deal, but will decide whether to sign it once he learns all the details. VOA's Zlatika Hoax reports both sides had to make major concessions to reach an agreement.
The compromise deal does not include $5.7 billion that Trump demanded for close to 350 kilometers of new wall, but it does include $1.4 billion in funds for about 90 kilometers of steel barriers, in addition to some 1,100 kilometers already in place.
I'm not happy about it. It's not doing the trick, but I'm adding things to it. And when you add whatever I have to add, it's all going to happen where we're going to build a beautiful, big, strong wall that's not going to let criminals and traffickers and drug dealers and drugs into our country. It's very simple.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was optimistic that the president would sign the final bill.
I think he's got a pretty good deal here, you know. The speaker said there wouldn't be a dollar for a wall. Well, I guess we're going to have an argument now about what's a wall, but barriers. And they wanted a cap on detention apprehension. So I think he's done just fine. I hope he'll conclude that because he's got to sign the bill.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer urged Trump to sign the budget agreement.
The president should not make the same mistake he made a couple of months ago when there was a bipartisan agreement and he wouldn't sign it and caused the shutdown.
Trump signaled Tuesday he did not want another shutdown.
I don't think you're going to see a shutdown. I wouldn't want to go to it now. If you did have it, it's the Democrats' fault.
But he said he would consider every option to get the wall built, including declaring a national emergency at the border to get the necessary funds. Declaring an emergency is likely to meet with legal challenges that would delay the construction of the border wall. But the president has the executive privilege to move some emergency funds as he deems necessary, said Democratic Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia.
I would hope he wouldn't take it away from the necessary areas that we have that have been heavily affected, and whether it be the floods and the fires and all the devastation. But there's other areas where he can move some things around. I think he's probably looking at that.
Details on the border security deal have yet to be ironed out, and the bill has to clear both chambers of Congress before it would go to the president for signing. Zlatica Hoch, VOA News, Washington.
Among the top stories trending in the world, Russian private military contractors in Central Africa benefit in the midst of instability. Saudi's Crown Prince is to announce a $20 billion package of investment projects for Pakistan. The U.S. and Poland host a Mideast conference in Warsaw. And in Thailand, the party aligned with ousted Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat is under fire for nominating Princess Ubonrat for Prime Minister in the March elections. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in November 2018, scientists verified the discovery of a giant 31-kilometer-wide meteorite impact crater buried 1 kilometer beneath the ice sheet in northwestern Greenland. Scientists writing in the American Geological Union's journal Geophysical Research Letters are announcing the possible discovery of a second impact crater buried under more than 1.65 kilometers of the Greenland ice sheet. This newly found but unverified impact crater is thought to be even bigger than the first, with a diameter of about 36 kilometers. While the newly found crater was found a mere 183 kilometers from the previous discovery, study authors say that it appears the two formed at different times. Like the first discovery, this second impact crater was found beneath Greenland's Hiawatha Glacier and must be further studied before the finding can be verified. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman has been convicted of drug trafficking and related charges at a trial in New York. The jury convicted Guzman Tuesday after 6 days of deliberations on all 10 counts against him, and now faces the possibility of spending the rest of his life in prison. The end of a 3-month trial marks the end of Guzman's rule of the Sinaloa cartel, which prosecutors described as the world's largest and most prolific drug trafficking organization. Federal prosecutors said Guzman's rise to power began in the 1980s, when his expertise at smuggling cocaine into the U.S. produced hefty proceeds for Colombian cartels. The 61-year-old will likely be sent to a U.S. maximum security prison to prevent another escape. Guzman broke out of Mexican prisons twice before he was extradited to the U.S. in 2017. France's military struck rebels in Chad to prevent a coup d'etat against President Idriss Deby, according to Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian. On Deby's request, French warplanes bombed a heavily armed rebel convoy that crossed last week from Libya deep into Chadian territory. The French jets destroyed dozens of pickup trucks, and the Chadian army subsequently said it had captured more than 250 rebels from the Union of Forces of Resistance, or UFR, a Libya-based rebel coalition. France intervened in 2008 to stop the UFR from toppling Deby. Reporter Catherine Field in Paris is covering the story. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the foreign minister's announcement.
It was during a meeting with parliamentarians in the French lower house of parliament on Tuesday. The French foreign minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, said that France had indeed struck rebels in Chad to prevent a coup d'etat. He said that they had intervened to stop a heavily armed rebel convoy that had crossed into Chadian territory from Libya. He said that they carried out these attacks at the request of the Chadian president, that the President Deby had actually written to France saying that they needed help, that they had tried themselves to push back at this group of rebels, which are said to be from the Union of Forces of Resistance, that Libya-based rebel coalition. But the president of Chad said they'd been unsuccessful and had therefore were asking perhaps one of their closest allies, France, to intervene.
And what is France's president saying, President Macron?
At this stage, President Macron is saying nothing. What we are waiting for is that on Wednesday evening here in Paris, the French foreign minister will again speak to lawmakers in a special commission. He will speak to the Foreign Affairs Committee, and we expect there to be specific questions about France's role in this particular part of the world. We've always known that France has a particular relationship with that area of the world, and in the past there have been allegations that France has propped up various friendly governments, particularly rebels, and they seize power. And when you look back also at the history of French intervention in Chad, you know, it's been several occasions when France has come to the aid of Deby, particularly when rebels have threatened the capital. So there will be specific questions there. But at the base of all this, one has to remember that since the migrant crisis, since the terror attacks in France, and since there has been what France considers a threat to its own security by rebels, by militias in that area of Africa, particularly the Sahel, that France has had what it says a very different relationship to that part of the world and feels that it needs to intervene, not just to prop up governments that see matters through a French perspective, but also to prop up governments that would be threatened by rebel forces.
What are civilians saying about this in Chad?
There seems to be the big discrepancy really tends to be on the number of rebels that were captured. On the one hand, you've got the Chad army saying they captured more than 250 rebels. The rebels are saying, or the UFR are saying, well, no, it's only about 30 fighters. And the French are saying, well, perhaps it was about 100 rebels who were held after surrendering. So that's what we're hearing at the moment. In fact, on the ground, we are hearing that the UFR is saying, well, this isn't as big, but they're also saying we will not be going away, and that just because they have lost this one particular battle with the help of the French, being turned back by the French, that doesn't mean that they will go away.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Paris.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the West perpetually talks about its democratic values, self-determination, and freedoms. Can these concepts become realities in Africa? Discussing freedom of expression on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Take it now. Science.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Coming up on the Science edition of Press Conference USA, a discussion on vaccines and the so-called vaccination resistance movement. Our program will feature conversations with medical doctor and vaccinologist Dr. Peter Hotez and Christina Hildebrand, founder of an organization that advocates for vaccine and pharmaceutical product choice. Listen this Saturday and Sunday for the Science edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Signs that the U.S. and China might reach an agreement in trade talks and news of a tentative deal to avoid another government shutdown in Washington helped push world stock markets and bond yields broadly higher Wednesday. Beijing and Washington are trying to hammer out a deal before a March 1st deadline. VOA's Asia's Ira Melman discusses the level of progress with Craig Allen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council.
I think that the news out of Beijing is mixed, that there has been progress on intellectual property rights, there's been progress on market access. It's less clear that there has been progress on the structural issues, such as industrial policy, such as state-owned enterprises. And so we're hopeful that Ambassador Lighthizer and the team will keep focused on these longer-term and more difficult issues, in addition to making progress on intellectual property as well as market access.
Now, I have read that you and your organization takes a positive view as far as movement on IT, but not so much on tariffs.
Well, we are against the imposition of tariffs indeed, because tariffs are a tax on the American people, and the money that has gone into the Treasury since the imposition of tariffs have all come from importers. However, we do believe that the president, by using tariffs, has successfully gotten the attention of the Chinese and that progress is being made. And we just want to ensure that after having gone through so much difficulty and so many negotiations and so much turmoil that we come out with good results from this round of negotiations. And good results would mean addressing some of the structural barriers that keep out foreign companies from the Chinese market.
What do you feel the possibility of attaining that goal are?
Well, I think that it is probably a matter of gradations. So as I noted, it looks like good progress on market access. It looks like good progress on intellectual property rights. It looks like good progress on the purchases of commodities. When we get to industrial policy, we believe that Ambassador Lighthizer and his team will make good progress. But this becomes difficult when we're talking about cyber. For example, in by what means can the administration address China's use cyber or the internet to obtain industrial secrets? So we would like for the administration to focus on that. We would like the administration to focus on state-owned enterprises. There are great swaths of the Chinese economy, be it energy or finance or construction or steel or media or telecom, that are totally controlled by Chinese state-owned enterprises in the state, and they need to be opened up. And that is a more difficult prospect that Ambassador Lighthizer is wrestling with right now. We hope to see substantial progress in these areas.
That was VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Craig Allen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council. When Singapore played host in June to the first summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, business people in the city state made money from summit-themed merchandise and side events. About 2,500 journalists visited, and Singapore Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong was quoted as saying the summit would bolster his country's image abroad. Now, Vietnam has host to a second Kim-Trump summit scheduled for February 27th and 28th should expect an even bigger boost. They say the summit, covering U.S. concerns about the buildup of North Korean weapons, will earn Vietnam new respect from both democratic and communist countries. A senior UN official reports the distribution of life-saving aid is nearly complete for 40,000 Syrians stranded in the remote Rukaban camp near the Jordanian border. The UN's largest humanitarian convoy in Syria's 8-year conflict arrived at the Rukaban 6 days ago. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
This is the second UN convoy to reach this harsh desert outpost since November. Corinne Fleischer is the World Food Programme representative in Syria and Rukban convoy team leader. She says the Syrian Arab Red Crescent and UN agencies are in the process of delivering a 1-month supply of food, basic medical items, clothes, sanitation, hygiene, and other essential relief to the last 7,000 beneficiaries. She says the vast majority of people are women and children who have been living in this desolate region for up to 4 years under increasingly desperate conditions. She says winter in the desert is extremely cold. She notes at least 8 young children have died at this site as of January. Speaking on a poor phone line from Rukban, Fleischer says the camp is situated in the middle of nowhere, and this affects every aspect of life for the thousands of people trapped there.
There is not a single doctor in the entire Rukban settlement. Healthcare is provided by nurses, many of them without any formal training. We talked to a nurse who has 15 years of experience, who is displaced from Palmyra. And she said that the conditions in the health clinic she works in are so basic as if she was operating in the Stone Age.
Rukban is located close to the Al Tanf U.S. military base near where the borders of Syria, Jordan, and Iraq meet. The residents include tens of thousands of people who have fled from Islamic State-held parts of Syria, which have been under attack by Russian and U.S.-led coalition airstrikes. Besides the distribution of humanitarian assistance, Fleischer says aid workers have immunized some 7,000 children against measles, polio, and other diseases. She is calling on all parties to allow the UN to continue critical assistance for people in the camp. For example, she says establishing well-equipped health clinics in the camp would save many lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In a landmark vote, Australian lawmakers have made it easier for sick refugees held offshore to be treated in the country. It's the first time in almost 80 years a government has lost a vote on its own legislation in the lower house of parliament. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Independent lawmakers, the Australian Greens and the opposition Labor Party, have joined forces to humiliate Australia's minority centre-right coalition government. The bill passed Tuesday in the House of Representatives by a single vote and was approved by the upper chamber, the Senate, on Wednesday. The legislation will give doctors a greater say on which refugees detained offshore can travel to Australia for medical treatment. Since 2013, Canberra has held asylum seekers arriving by boat in camps on the tiny Republic of Nauru and on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea in the South Pacific, and has insisted they would never be allowed to resettle in Australia. Doctors have said medical facilities on the islands are inadequate for about 1,000 asylum seekers and refugees who remain. The government had argued the new medical evacuation law would encourage more asylum seekers to try to reach Australia by sea, and that some would die during the voyage. Prime Minister Scott Morrison accused opposition politicians of weakening border security.
They are failing the test of duty to the Australian people, and they do it trying to kid themselves that this is being done in the name of humanitarianism. Well, I remind them that their humanitarianism, as supposed last time, led to child deaths. It led to the total destruction of our borders, and it took the strength again of a coalition government, Mr. Speaker. The people of Australia will remember this day and know that this is now on your head.
The Australian Navy has also, since 2013, been ordered to turn back migrant boats, a policy that critics say is illegal under international law. The government says its uncompromising policy has stopped a steady flow of migrant boats and saved lives at sea. Critics have argued Australia is turning its back on desperate people fleeing persecution. The passing of the legislation reopens old wounds in Australia's divisive debate about asylum seekers and immigration. It's an issue that will be prominent in the run-up to the next federal election, which is expected in May. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
It's a stretch, but with Valentine's Day just around the corner, we thought we'd talk about the heart, but with a tech twist. Each heart is different, and that can make surgery challenging. VOA's Kevin Enoch reports on new technology that creates a 3D model of a specific patient's heart to help a doctor prepare for surgery.
University of Washington doctors are seen here doing heart surgery using catheters. These long tubes reach into the heart and allow doctors to perform non-invasive heart surgery. Dr. Mark Ryson is better at it now that he gets to practice by using an exact 3D model of this heart created by 3D printers using ultrasound scans.
So what this allows us to do, these 3D prints, is it allows us to physically see the heart and then to understand the nuances of the anatomy, both the anatomy itself, but also how the anatomy within the heart is related to other structures.
Dimitri Levin feeds ultrasound data into a 3D printer that creates a model accurately and quickly.
One of the huge advantages is a turnaround time. So the time between when I get the data set and when I deliver the model could be cut down tremendously into hours instead of days.
Quick turnaround allows Ryson to plan his surgery in ways he's never been able to before.
In the types of procedures that I do, I think what it does is it gives me an opportunity to rehearse the procedure beforehand, which is very, very powerful. Because as opposed to me doing these procedures and engaging the various valves for the first time when I'm doing it on a patient, I could actually practice that outside the patient.
Recent studies show that most aortic valve surgeries are done via catheter than by more dangerous open heart surgery. Kevin Enochs, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. Please visit our website at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. On behalf of our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean, I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Thanks for joining us and enjoy the day.